United made use of their two-week break and delivered a refreshed performance to banish the demons of losing to Borough is how I would like to have started this pod. However, that didn't go down, and alas, we're here to talk about a terrible afternoon in Northampton. A very warm welcome to Under the Abbey Stand, the review show. Not the result we were looking for, but it's definitely the panel that I was hoping for. Joining me today is Mr. Julian Roberts.
Oh, that's lovely, George. I mean, I'm feeling about as terrible as that performance at the moment. So you're gonna have to get something out of me today.
Well, it's not going to be the chirpiest of pods, but I could start off with a bit of news that would cheer you up, if you like.
Please, anything.
Yesterday morning, before the game, I went into town and I bought myself a new shirt for the FSA Awards.
Oh, that is nice.
I can only describe the shirt as a bit of Julian. I think you're going to really like it.
Okay, great. What are we talking here?
It's our favourite brand, Carhartt.
Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I should mention their name, but then I thought, actually, they probably are going to listen.
So
if I name drop enough, they'll send us some free stuff. So
Utah sponsored by Carhartt in the future. Really, I love it. I love your work.
Really great brand. And it's a small, which is very weird because I'm a large, but somehow I could fit in a small. So,
well, there we go. Look at that.
And also joining us on the panel today are Sergio Giorgini of the panel. It's Tom Walker.
Fashion, you can still find him. Oh, hello, darkness, my old friend.
The amount of pods that you started with this year with that exact line says so much about the sort.
That's
of
almost as much of a catchphrase as the old platform. Yeah. Are we like every time?
Platform to darkness and all that. Are you ready, boys? You look worn out. You look like you've been through a tough afternoon. I skipped it and watched from home via my dodgy stick. My dodgy stick, which funnily enough, didn't work for 10 minutes yesterday. And I missed two Northampton goals. It was kind of...
Oh, really?
It's as if the dodgy stream knew that it wasn't worth watching at that point. But I did catch up with what I missed in those 10 minutes, and it wasn't great viewing.
No, it wasn't, was it? It was trying to do you a favour, George.
Yeah.
It's a sign from God if ever there was one, isn't it, that?
Yeah. We, unsurprisingly, have had a ton of questions. So thank you very much to everyone that has got in touch. The running order pretty much is just answering questions, and we've got some bleak ones to start. How about this to kick off the pod? David, he has asked, how, after a two-week break with a near fully fit squad and brand new training facilities, do you manage to turn out such a turgid performance? Chaps, who would like to answer that one? Who is ready and willing to go to answer David's point there, which is what we're all thinking. You know, we had that extended break. We should be more refreshed. We should be willing and ready to go. And we should have the bit between our teeth because we want to banish the 5-0 from the week before. And what we got just wasn't that at all.
Same old shit, right? I mean, I'll have a little go. Brand new training facilities. First of all, I think it's probably worth mentioning, as you did on the previous show, you and Casper, that is obviously like a pretty big step forward for the football club. And that's all, that's a very big move. And they do look brilliant. And I'm not sure that they are intended to have a short-term impact like this, more of a longer-term sort of infrastructure thing at the club. But that's a positive bit out of the way. Let's get that out of the way. I think the other elements of his question are more suitable here. The near fully fit squad is very true. I think only Ibsen Rossi was missing yesterday, and a two-week break. You'd think, like you say, they should have the bit between their teeth. They want to banish that.
Only Kaikai had an excuse, yeah. Right? He was playing against Mo Salah. So
yeah, exactly.
Bit of an excuse.
Exactly. Fair enough. But yeah, like, you know, there's no excuse in terms of injuries or tiredness or anything like that. A two-week break to not just sort of emotionally try and get up for a game where you're trying to prove a point back to your supporters you've let down pretty badly on Derby Day, but also you've got 2 weeks to figure out a team, right? Like, I mean, it's very different. I imagine, I don't know what their day-to-days are like, but if you're playing Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, it's much harder to, you get much
try
less
something
time
new.
To prepare for whoever you're playing that week. And you have to maybe, you know, you just don't get quite that time to prepare. This is 2 weeks just to figure out, okay, what are Northampton's strong points? But more than that, and I think, you know, the word turgid is perfect. It's always working out where their strong points are and how we can defend. We're such a reactive team. We're never proactive. And I think that's what's really frustrating a lot of people at the moment. More than even just losing 2-1 at Northampton, which I think, you know, you can take if it happens in a certain way. But for me, it's just the manner of these defeats. And it's the fact that this isn't the first time we've seen it. Great point from Matt Ramsey I saw yesterday, a friend of the pod that I'll steal now, is that if you rewind to this time last year, like granted, we were starting a similar run of form. I think, you know, we've spoken about the similarities between the season and last enough times. But the thing about this season is I think this is the fourth time we've had like real horror shows. And mm-hmm. that isn't necessarily losing by 4-5, 6-0, right? You look at Orient, terrible. Cheltenham. Terrible, posh, obviously. And yesterday, despite, you know, we shouldn't have really scored yesterday as far as I'm concerned. I think that wasn't exactly a merited goal. It's another one that you lose 2-0 without barely laying a punch. It's like, you know, you've got 2 weeks to try and think, how are we going to impact this game? And it doesn't look like they do that.
The previous game we played, essentially two own goals, a goal that came from a goalkeeping error. Like the one thing you expected from Saturday was to not concede from our own mistakes.
And the same mistake, sorry, like Adam May like bottling out of a challenge for the second one. And like the first one, miscommunication between the centre back and the keeper. We've seen Bennett and Stevens do that before against Shrewsbury. It's like these it's just everything that we see is just a repetition. It's not the performance in isolation, which is obviously bad, but it's the fact that it keeps happening.
The point you made there, it's about what a lot of people are frustrated about, and myself included, is just the negativity in the tactics and the setup. Like it's one thing, right? And it begrudges me to say this, but it's one thing to go to London Road and lose, who are, you know, they are a top four, top six team. But to go to Northampton, a team who admittedly, all right, they won their last game against Burton, but they're not top of the form table by any means. They are a team that we should be competing with on the pitch, definitely off the pitch, similar sort of budgets and so forth. There's no reason why we should be targeting that game and going there and saying, right, well, let's just stay in it and try and nick a point. It's not that kind of game. And on that point, Tom, I'll bring you in. We've had a question from Joe about tactics and basically says, is it time for a total tactical reset for Bonner to ditch the negative style that seems to have been something he's become so fixated on and maybe start to try and take the game to other teams? What's your thought on it, on that?
Well, it can't be a coincidence that virtually the same players under a couple of changes for, you know, for Northampton from the posh game, but it's virtually the same players every week in the same formation with the same approach is yielding virtually identical results, which is, well, it's very negative. There doesn't seem to be any sort of clear attacking strategy as far as I can see. And, you know, the question becomes, can you keep a clean sheet? And obviously, if we can't, we've seen that we're pretty, you know, worryingly bad at getting back into games, basically. Like, worryingly bad. You know, you're thinking the amount of times that, you know, you're likely to go behind in a season and to essentially write off games, which is what is happening because you can see the goal. Is a really poor trait. I mean, this kind of goes away a little bit from the setup of the team and the formation and the tactics and stuff. But I also think there's a bit of a mentality problem in the team as well. Like there's a bit of a kind of weak mentality. Like, you know, Julian there was talking about things that are repeating themselves. You know, obviously at Posh, it's 0-0 and 7 minutes later, it's 3-0. And, you know, obviously at Northampton, it's 0-0. And then 6 minutes later, it's 2-0. It's like, it's such a worrying trait of a football team that their reaction to conceding is just to basically shit the bed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, you know, again, that's, you know, not so much kind of a tactical thing, but more of, you know, the kind of mindset of the squad and, you know, you wonder how much that comes down to, you know, the manager. You know, it's surely
must,
their job.
It must be, yeah, it must be something because this is a more experienced squad compared to last year.
I think the squad's good.
When you go a goal down or you go two goals down in a quick time frame, that's when you want your leaders on the pitch. And you sort of look at the lineup on Saturday and you look at the lineup against Borough. You've got players there that are of an age that they know the game well enough to how to respond. And that's then not even factoring in those that have played at the higher levels. Like,
yeah, look, for me, like I said, the squad's good. Sorry, what I mean by that is, fine, we can talk a little bit about some recruitment issues. I still think we should have got another right back. We've only got two strikers in the squad, whatever. But I think the players we have, you can't tell me that they're worse than that Northampton team yesterday. You can't make that argument to me. Like it's not true. We've got loads of experienced players in there, proven goal scorers, proven talent at this level. And like some things not working. So they're not being put together properly. They're not being told to play in a way that gets their strengths out of them.
I mean, this is where, you know, obviously all the messaging that's come out post Posh, you know, about what a fantastic football team they are. I mean, really, really, like, weird to see our own manager rubbing that in our noses 2 weeks after.
I'm saying it now, mate. It's,
but, yeah, that is something to mention, though, isn't it? That press conference, like, 2 weeks after. Come on, mate. Just like, don't be telling us how good Posh are 2 weeks after they've just battered us 5-0.
The point you make there is a good one, which is, you know, forgetting the context of the local derby and the rivalry and stuff. You know, Posh are obviously a good team, and you know, Bonner's right to say that can happen to you. I think he's been a little bit relaxed with his critique of it, shall we say? But that totally falls down when you go away to Northampton, because yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, player for player, I think in terms of quality, I think, you know, they've, you know, got a couple of decent players in their squad. I think Leonard's a really good player. Hoskins is obviously a quality player who's, you know, done well at this level before. But player for player, I think R11 and the subs that come on, I think, you know, would get in Northampton's team pretty much to a man. And, you know, to go there, and this is the thing that really gets me, is that it has just been 2 weeks, or you would think it's been 2 weeks, where surely the sole focus is on implementing a strategy which, you know, kind of magnifies Northampton's weaknesses and kind of, you know, limits their threats, and we weren't able to do either, really. And that's the most worrying thing. And yeah, I think there is a lot to unpick from it. Like, I think, you know, we can talk about the manager, and obviously that will be a conversation that will rumble on, but, you know, we'll come on to talk about certain individuals as well. But I gotta say, I think some of those leaders that you mentioned, Edgewood, they've got to do more. You know, you know, these guys have to take responsibility. Like, a lot of them are seasoned pros. You know, they're earning money that we've not paid to players for a long time, and you know, you just ask them to go out there and kind of show their worth and stand up when it's not easy. And I think, you know, Bonner can do everything. You know, whatever he wants to do, whatever, you know, motivation he wants to sort of give to them, and whatever, you know, setup he wants to do and tactics and all the rest of it, but, you know, it's the old cliche of, as soon as they cross the white line, you know, it's on the players to perform, and there's got to be a bit of kind of, you know, professional pride in it as well, right? You know, you go away and you get totally humiliated in obviously what is a massive game for the football club, and you have to assume that they understand that as players. And, you know, you would think that the natural reaction is to come out all guns blazing, and it was just a little bit limp in the first half, and obviously then we find ourselves sort of, you know, 10, 15 minutes after half time, 2-0 down, and it's like, all right, there's still, you know, an outside chance of getting a point. It's not helped by the red card, and but, you know, having talked about what we've talked about in weeks gone by of how, you know, how we can kind of impact games and how we can create chances enough to, you know, get back into games or really take, you know, basically take the initiative. You know, as soon as you're one and especially two goals down, it's going to be a really tough ask. And you know, I'm looking at Ryan Bennett, I'm looking at Jordan Cousins, I'm looking at, you know, Danny Andrew, even just to show a little bit more, and like Adam May as well. I know he's not maybe got, you know, the age that these guys do, but he's certainly got plenty of experience. Like, he's played plenty of games. He's a big figure at his football club, and you know, we will talk about the manager, because obviously it's a debate that has to happen. But you know, there's 11 players on the pitch. Well, 11 for part of it anyway. that just have to do more, and you know, it's always a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Of, you know, is it the way they're set up, or is it the way they're kind of executing it? But I think it's fair to say it's probably a little bit of both.
I was just going to say, just on that, Julian, let's talk about the first goal, because Tom talks about senior players needing to do more on the pitch, and I agree. And that first goal, Ryan Bennett didn't cover himself in glory. I think maybe it's probably more of a Jack Stevens issue, but I don't think you can separate the two. So yeah, I was just going to say, like, how disappointing was it to see a goal like that go in?
Oh, it's so frustrating. It's horrible, that first goal. It's one of those that, like, you know, like your opposition teams that you play sort of quoting, being like, oh, look how shit these are, right? It's just like, it's a bit of a relegation bingo card sort of goal to concede. Live, I thought that it was Bennett. The replay, obviously you don't know.
Yeah.
It's a bit more Stevens. He must have called for it, I assume. And then hasn't,
or Bennett is anticipating him to be there and is doing the call for him, which is
miscommunication. But I would say, like, if you're Bennett, just clear the thing. Like,
that's what I keep coming back to. It's like, surely could have looked over his shoulder, seen that Stevens wasn't where he thought he was, or, yeah. or saw that the Northampton guy was getting closer. Just put it out.
I think the difficulty with it is with Bennett is that he's naturally got his back to goal because he's obviously you know, facing the other way, right? And the ball's kind of going over his head. I think it's clearly a miscommunication. So
yeah,
there's obviously blame on both sides. You know, one way or another, they've not understood who should come and who should go. But I think in that situation, the goalkeeper's just got to come out and just clean everything out, whether it's two players and a ball or, you know, just get everything out and just kind of get it out of there. I think Stevens comes and he stops and he comes again. And by that, the striker's kind of nipped in and taken the ball away from him. And obviously it's an empty net to roll it into. So, that's the taking control thing that I was referring to earlier. Like, you know, Julian, you mentioned it earlier on the pod. We've seen this from particularly Ryan Bennett before, and for all the, you know, quality that he's brought and the pedigree, like, there are a couple of examples creeping in of where, you know, you're looking at this and you're thinking maybe there is a reason why, you know, these top teams in this division aren't taking a punt on someone like Ryan Bennett, who's only 33, let's not forget. Maybe it's just because there are errors in his game a little bit. And, you know, obviously he brings a wealth of experience. I'm not doubting his value to the squad for a second, but, you know, the Shrewsbury run's embarrassing, you know, because he just stopped, didn't he, playing that day? And, you know, at Northampton, it's just one of those situations where, you know, as much as I think probably Stevens should do more, and probably, I think, if you're looking to apportion blame, which I guess we are, you know, most of that does go to Stevens, but you're looking at your, you know, what you assume is either your top earner or very near your top earner. And, you know, the guy that's played in the Premier League and played against some of the best forwards in the world, you look at him to take a bit of initiative there, take a bit of control of the situation. And, yeah, they didn't. And it's an easy goal, right?
And then the other thing as well is, like, you know, sort of going back to that wider point about, like, the frustration from us is that, like, if we're going to play this sort of brand of football, if we can call it that, the one thing you can't also be doing is, like, is defensive howlers, right? Like, you can't, you have to be so solid. And, like, these are simple things. It's like, if someone scores, you know, 30-yard screaming, you sort of go, all right, well, whatever, fair enough. But, like, if you're going to play so risk-averse and so negative and defence-first mindset, you also just have to be, like, in these situations, just have
really
to be
tight, smarter.
Yeah, and tight. And
It's so annoying because I watched the first half and thought, do you know what? It's pretty, pretty even here. Like, I agree with what we were saying about, you know, before the game kicks off, man for man, we've probably got the better squad. But as the 45 minutes went, it was pretty close. It was pretty tight. Really even affair, and you just think actually it's going to be a moment of brilliance that's going to open this up and someone's going to score, and actually it was the complete opposite. That it was a moment of, like, stupidity. It was a moment of lack of concentration from two players. And it's you're absolutely right there. If we're going to be defense minded and we're going to play this low block and all that, you've got to be really tight and cut these things out, especially given that we've had 2 weeks to think about it, having conceded, you know, deflected goal, a goal from a charge down clearance that led to a corner, an own goal, only in the last game.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's like, you know, Bennett should back himself to just clear that for a throw and be able to defend that throw. Like, the, you know, the thing that Bennett and Morrison are brilliant at as centre halves is being tall, commanding, and, you know, real aerially being really solid. So, like, someone running in behind, you'd think just be risk averse, as the manager is sort of telling you to do, right? And then we put ourselves in that position. But as Tom mentioned earlier, I think the more disappointing thing is, okay, fine, you know, mistakes happen. It's the reaction to those mistakes, which in the past two games have been terrible.
Well, let's talk about the second goal briefly then, because, yeah, again, it's another instance where the second was pretty quick after the first. Not for the first time this season, we've had questions come in asking about Liam Bennett and whether he should take a break or whether Okadina needs a run in that position and so forth. But you mentioned it earlier, Julian, and I tend to agree. I actually think the issue with that goal started a lot further up the pitch. And again, Bennett was left kind of sort of exposed to errors elsewhere. And what I also thought was interesting about Saturday was obviously seeing Brophy out on the left in the first half and seeing how Bennett did all right, actually, and without him there. And, you know, Lancaster didn't really do much to prove himself to be starting on that right-hand side for me. But, yeah, what was your take on the second goal?
Tom, you can take this one, but all I was going to say was, I think a big thing that we said when the lineups came out is, how has Adam May kept his place in this side? And I don't really want to be going too far down this line, but there has got to be a line when you put in a performance like he did at London Road. He's coming back from injury, you know, like it, there's
how much how much grace does he have, right? Like how
that's
long
the thing. Yeah,
how long do we give it? Because obviously he missed the whole season, but I know some people who are probably gonna stick their heads up now and say, oh, I doubted him before that and so forth. But you know, he is, you know, he had what, pre-season?
He
had full pre-season with us. So we're now the end of November. Like at what point do you sort of say, actually, it's no longer about you coming back to match fitness and full sharpness? And maybe it is a question of you're not up to this level, or you're not up to playing the position or the role that you're being asked, which could be either, really.
It could be either, but I just think it's almost a principle thing. Like there's a couple that we picked out after Posh, and Mabe was one of them. Mm-hmm. And for him to then keep his place in the side, I was really surprised by it, to be honest. And I talked a lot about the fact that, you know, having Jordan Cousins at London Road would have been a big help. So Mabe played in that position, is obviously asked to play in a slightly different role. But that's all it is. It's a slightly different role. Like if you can't adapt from playing centre mid to centre defensive mid, like mm-hmm. it says a lot about you as your intelligence as a footballer, as far as I'm concerned. And he put in a shocker, and then he kept his place in the side. And I don't know. Maybe that's just a bigger point. I think there's almost a principle of
and
like,
he'll probably have to play Tuesday because of the Digby suspension.
Yeah, exactly.
How much of an impact do you think his injuries had on all of this? Because like, you know, obviously
all in two challenges.
Yeah, well, yeah. A little bit. I mean, you know, there's got to be a psychological impact of having like such a significant injury, but you know, that I think it kind of adds on to the point a little bit. There comes a point where if that really is the case, and that's really, you know, stopping you from getting involved as much as you need to, like maybe a bit of time out of the team might not be the worst thing. And, you know, clearly an injury like that is going to have a huge impact on anyone's career. Like, you know, it's rare for players to come back better players after having such a significant layoff. But you know, Adame that we saw in our first season back in League One, compared to what we've seen since he's come back into the team, just miles apart. Like, you know, you remember Mabe, like particularly towards the end of that first season back, like, you know, scoring goals, getting involved going forward, and obviously to the extent where he's, you know, got a decent sized deal. You know, I think it's 3 years, and you know, again, I still think there's value there. Like, I'd kind of want to temper the criticism on Mabe just a little bit, because you know, I think there's still a player that can add value, but I think this is something that we discussed, and you know, Mark Bonner has been very, very quick to absolutely like lambast fringe players. I'm thinking of, like, you know, he hasn't said names, but you know, he's talking about like Gordon, for example, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if they play, like if they don't impact games so well in like a pizza trophy game when we're already out of the competition, like they're bombed out, like they're not seen again in matchday squads. And you know, there are certain people in the team who just like, they're getting away with murder, like, you know, relatively given what their performance are. I'll bring Digby into that as well. I think he's been pretty atrocious recently. Like, he played quite well against Portsmouth, but he's looked well out of his depth in the role that he's played in for me. And May's obviously been really poor as well. And also, you know, you can talk about Liam Bennett as well. Can he maybe, you know, have a few games out of the team? And I just think it's you know, it comes back to that old cliche, isn't it? You know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect different results. That's the definition of madness. But yeah, I mean, what can you do?
Julian, you said you didn't think we were going to score in the second half. We didn't deserve to. I actually thought the subs did make an impact, and it did seem like there was an urgency then. And
this is another point to make. Sorry, George. Sorry to butt in, but you know, we're talking about running themes here, and this is, you know, I mean, who the fuck knows how many times we've sat here on a Sunday recording talking about this exact issue, right? The subs come in, mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just checking to make sure I've got it accurate. The subs, four subs come between minute 63 and 64. That's 10 minutes after we've gone 2-0 down. Mm. I would argue it wasn't good in the first half, so maybe changes even at half time or shortly after half time might have been, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. Like, I get that, you know, maybe not suggesting that right at the time, but I don't think the first half was good by any stretch. When you go a goal down, you're like, right, something's got to change. You go 2-0 down, you're like, right, something's got to change. And it's still 10 minutes until the subs come on. I'm like,
yeah,
you know,
take the initiative.
Yeah, I think the question
with added time and stuff, right? Like, there's still like half an hour to go, so there's still plenty of time for people to impact the game. There's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, the question I was going to ask is, you know, I thought Gassan and Kachunga made an impact when they came on, and so you know, and this is a question that we've had come in as well. Like, should we be thinking now about a setup where we have sort of two of them alongside Okudibere or one of them alongside Okudibere and going with a front two, which I know is something, Tom, you've been mentioning in, on previous pods, but I don't know your thoughts, Julian, on sort of those people when they came on and whether they made enough of an impact that you think actually, yeah, we should be, you know, changing the formation for Tuesday night.
Well, I thought Katrunga particularly looked lively. I thought he was finding really good positions and, like, talk about taking the initiative, just having a shot sometimes. I know that's proper, like, basic football stuff, but, like, God, like, the goal comes from that, right? It's like, you never know what's going to happen. And if you have a shot on target, keeper spills it, someone follows up. That's often what happens when you put yourself in those positions. We talked earlier about, actually, we were talking on the train. George, this will be one for you as well. The year we went down from the Football League, 04-05.
All right.
Do you remember how many penalties we got that year?
Castle. Yes.
One,
we got,
right?
We got one penalty in our last away game. At Rushden, yeah.
And people often talk about, you know, why are teams up the league? Look how many penalties they get. Or like, but it's because they put themselves in those positions on the pitch, right? For things to happen. Football is often...
Contact to happen in the box, yeah.
Yeah, right. Football is...
Famously, it's got to happen in the box.
It's got to happen in the box and it has to be a foul.
You could be close to the box though, Tom, like depending on how, you know... good you are at cheating. But anyway, that's not the point Julian's making.
Well, that's not going to complicate things.
It's quite a tangential point anyway. It's just sort of the general thing about taking initiative in attacking positions and trying to create a bit of sort of random luck and a bit of, you know, chance, things that can fall your way. But you have to sort of proactively get yourself into those positions for that to happen. And that's what I thought Katrunga did quite a lot of yesterday. So I thought he was good. With the strikers, I would say, again, if we're going to play the system, Fajiri isn't, to me, a target man. So Gassan makes an obvious instant impact there by just being able to hold the ball up and being like a beacon as someone that you can find long.
But do you know what? I thought Fajiri... Sorry to butt it again, George. Sorry, mate. I'm cutting you off every time. Eh? It's absolutely ruthless.
You can't get a bloody word in edgeways, George, today.
It's fine. When we go on stage at the FSAs to get that award and you're just gearing up to give the acceptance speech, I'll get you back right then.
What I was going to say is
go full Kanye West on you.
Just to shed, you know, a glimmer of positivity. I actually thought when the subs came on, I thought Fajiri actually looked quite good, playing a little bit deeper with Gassan off him. You know, we're talking about maybe like, you know, in the midfield area, like, you know, how does that look and who can play in that sort of number 10 role? Like, you know, that's got to be an option, right? For Fajiri just to play a little bit deeper. It allows you to get, you know, a goal, you know, two goal threats on the pitch, two clear goal threats and had men Fajiri at the same time. And I think, you know, obviously the question was asked about whether, you know, two of those three should be on the pitch at the same time. I'm not, you know, sure it necessarily has to be the case, but, you know, I think if they're both fit and available, it's got to be worth a go. And, you know, this is where we were talking at the start, like it's the same thing week after week after week. And it's like,
try
something a little bit different. It doesn't have to be like radical. It doesn't have to be like, you know, Joel getting the Christmas trees out again. I mean, it's that time of the year.
Two behind a solo striker. That's very Christmas tree, in my opinion.
Now we're talking.
But I was going to make a very similar point, Tom. And I think people's frustration is, we keep sticking with this tactic and this formation of, you know, controlling the game out of possession and being defensive. And it's like, well, actually, you have got some players there that can play. Why not try and be a little bit more attack-minding? I know, you know, Kinchunga's had injuries this season and so forth, but, you know, Kaikai hasn't, you know, hit the ground running and things like that. But you do have better players there. Like, why aren't we trying to play in a way that gets them on the pitch and on the ball and playing to their strengths rather than like playing them in this sort of, I would say anti-football, but you know, behind the ball style of play. Like,
and I thought someone else who came on that when got on the ball, you know, sort of, you could see a bit of his quality was Thomas. Let's just take the not being the first man from that last minute free kick out of the equation for a second. But he's such a tidy footballer, right? George Thomas, he's a brilliant player, great pedigree. If you're thinking of like, you know, imagine like playing 4-2-3-1 with like Cousins and Thomas and then the four that we ended the game with, or Brophy on the right, Katrunga on the left, Fajiri behind Ahadmi. Like this, it feels like there's potential there. It goes back to the point where like, I think there's definitely an element of players taking responsibility for some of these performances or having to step up. But I do think there's quality there. I do think there's enough quality there. Like you look at that team and you've still got, you know, Kaikai off the bench. No striker off the bench, sure, but that's a completely separate issue.
Hadme came on, but
But I'm saying if you start Fajiri and Hadme, then that's all you've got, right? But anyway, look, I thought
ruling out Janna, but whatever.
Ruling out Janna entirely, yeah. Talk about getting dropped.
Right, so we talked about the goals. We talked about the goal that got us back into the game. And you think, right, 20 minutes to go. We've got the momentum here. We can
I'm
do it.
Smiling already.
We can come back from 2-0. We can score two in an away game for the first time in a long time. And then we go and get a red card. You lads at the game, and actually some other people at the game, I received messages from saying, what's happened there? Because it gets booked and then he's off the pitch. And yeah, needless to say, we've had a few questions about that incident, which we'll get to now. Let's start with David, who says, is getting sent off for dissent just as we're getting back into the game? Does it sum up a lack of discipline that was evident in both their goals? And how does it get resolved?
I don't know how the fine system works at Cambridge United, but whatever the maximum penalty is, Paul Digby has to be receiving that. Mm. Like, you know, you could I watched Bonner's post match presser, and you could tell he's like seething, and you know, obviously everyone in the away end is as well. I kind of had a pretty decent view on what actually happened, and you know, like, as it was happening, I was like, you fucking child, what are you doing? Like, the weird thing about it is the foul that he gives away, firstly, like, it comes from his own terrible touch, which runs the ball away and turns it into a foot race, which
from an attacking opportunity as well, right? Let's not forget that, Tom. We were in their half near the box.
But... yeah, so it, obviously his poor control of the ball, which is, you know, something that I think just happens all the time with Digby's touch. It at times can just be so loose, and that was the case there. So it turns into a bit of a foot race with a player that he obviously knows he's not going to win. And the foul that he actually commits, I was like, brilliant. That's a great foul. Like, yeah, and the weird thing about it is he'd have made that foul full in the knowledge that he's going to get booked for it. And I'm like, sit there like, what are you like getting booked for dissent for? Like, what's he said? It's mental. And then his reaction afterwards is like throwing bottles around and stuff like that. Like, I know Michael Morris is the club captain, obviously wearing the armband, but Digby's Bonner's guy on the pitch, isn't it? And he has been, you know, throughout his tenure, really, you know, obviously saved the end of, you know, when he was interim manager before Digby arrived. But you know, he's been his leader on the pitch, I think it's fair to say. And he's totally let him down. Like, he's totally let him down. And this is where, like, you know, obviously we will have, you know, big discussions around, you know, Bonner's management and the way the team's set up, and obviously the results that are coming of it. But I mean, what can he do? Like, you know, you've made changes. You know, I think all agree that maybe the changes were a little bit late, but when they did happen, they, you know, had some sort of impact, even if there was a bit to do. You've just got in the game, and then like Bonner would just sit there like, what the fuck are you doing? What has crossed your mind there? Like, I don't know if he's just seen red or if he's just said something stupid to the ref and the ref's been a bit of a job swift, but like I'm kind of loathe to think that, you know, Digby's just he's let the football club down, really, in that situation. It's so poor.
And it's something so avoidable as well, right? The players would have been told start of the season, if you start mouthing back to the ref, it's a yellow card. I haven't seen the incident myself, but I think something similar happened at Brighton on Saturday. Lewis Dunk got two yellows very quickly. I don't know if the second one was a dissent. So it's happening. So it is so avoidable. And yeah, like you say, he's an experienced player. He's a leader profile of the team. And yeah, I feel like he's let us down. Julian, I've got a question on the topic for you that's coming from Liz. Is it possible that some of those bemoaning Digby for being undisciplined yesterday would have called the same behaviour passion 2 weeks ago? I think Liz is referring to the lack of yellow cards at the Borough away game.
Yeah, well, there was a lack of yellow cards yesterday up until Digby managed to make up for that in one swift move. Look, this is going to be a bit of a sit on the fence answer, but it feels to me like, you know, there's like a spectrum, right? And there's showing some passion without being stupid. And I suppose that's easier when you're watching than when you're in the heat of battle. But I think maybe we were referring slightly more to like sticking one in on someone, like a big challenge, like meaty challenges, let them know you're there, rather than something that's like so childish. I think that's the perfect word to use. He's given a foul away that is exactly as Tom says. It's a good foul. Like, it's the right thing to do. Foul the guy, bring it down, yellow card all day long, walk away, done. It's a free kick on the halfway line. It's not a dangerous position or anything. But like, he's got to be smarter than that, right? Like, it's not, I don't think it shows passion to be doing something like that. I think it's just a bit stupid. But I think there's probably the middle mark, which is, you know, put in a big tackle, let people know you're there, I suppose. I'm really bringing out all the cliches, but Yeah, I suppose my answer is like there's somewhere in the middle. And I think given the context of the game, you know, maybe do it at 5-0 down at Posh as an act of frustration and trying to leave your mark on the game. At 2-1 at Northampton when we're chasing the game in the last 10 minutes, it's just stupid, isn't it?
Right. I'll also make the point that like under no circumstances would I call getting two bookings in a minute, one of which being for dissent, passionate.
Yeah.
It's just fucking childish. It's stupid. And like obviously there's a context here. Like I'm not going to sit here and, you know, just bemoan lack of discipline and then, you know, it's a complete revision on last week. Like they're totally different incidents. You know, if you're 5-0 down away from home in your biggest game of the season, I think it's fair to say we probably could have kicked someone a little bit harder at some point. But hopefully it was clear, but maybe it's not. But what I was not advocating for was getting two bookings in a minute, one of which being for dissent, 3 minutes after you've just got back into the game. That's not what we were saying. Hopefully they're not listening and thinking, like, Digby's walking off the pitch and going, fucking done my job properly.
Yeah. You boys are going to be buzzing with it.
Right, let's just draw a line
text
under
Tom
that.
Right now.
Yeah. It's not what we mean. It's not what we meant.
Right. Beyond the Northampton game, we'll look at Lincoln in a second, but we've had a question from Steve that I want to get your thoughts on. Steve simply asks, is this a crisis? I think he's referring to the fact that it's now one win in either 13 or 14 games. I'd have to check. Not good looking on the pitch. And yeah, like you were sort of saying earlier, Julian, similar last year, we were talking about the results. This year, it's not just the results, but it's also the performances as well. Like it's the manner of the results.
I've got something to say on this. So I was thinking about this exactly.
It's how these podcasts work, mate.
Yeah, but if I didn't, well, there's plenty of times where I haven't, mate. I was thinking about this exact thing this morning. I suppose the first thing to say is like a club like us, where we are in this division, being 16th in League One, granted that changes rapidly. There's only 4 points, I think, between us and the drop zone. Mm-hmm. But I think it's almost impossible to say that like we can be in a crisis when we're 16th in League One. But for people who go every week or people who watch every week, the fact that you even asked that question, you know, we're comparing the similarities from last year to this year. This trend now is 14 months old, really, right? And more than anything, the performances, as you just said, this year have arguably in some games been worse. I did a bit of maths on this because like the second goal went in yesterday, I think I turned to Casper and I went, like, my God, like this calendar year, like how many times have we stood at games and like come out of games, not just on the losing side, because that's going to happen when you're, you know, following a team like ours, but just with performances like that feel like they're constantly repeating themselves. I went and looked from the start of October last year, right? We've played 54 games. We've won 13 of them, drawn 11 and lost 30 of them, right? You can add that on to the stat about going behind from last week. Obviously, those two things tally up. That's 50 points, I think, at 0 point. And then if you average that out over a season, that form is 42 points over a 46-game season. So it's been relegation form as an average for 14 months now, right? And I think the reason that plenty of outside observers might just look at the league table, look at what Mark Bunn has done and go, oh, Cambridge fans are overreacting massively, right? But that doesn't take into account the nuance of when you go to games every week, the frustration in that fan base is like, it's palpable. You can feel how frustrated people are when you're in that away end. So I don't think it's quite a crisis, but I think everyone is massively entitled to feeling how they're feeling. Because, I mean, you know, aside from the time and the money, it's supposed to be entertaining, this, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a lot to ask, but and I'm not saying that we go expecting to win every week, but I think there has to be that sort of context in when people are listening to this podcast or reading on the message board or on Twitter of how a lot of people are feeling is so informed by just the length of time that this has gone on for now. So I don't think it's a crisis, but something's got to change at some point, because imagine doing another 14 months of performances like this. Like, I'll be broken by the end of it. Actually, I don't know if I will. Sorry, maybe the point is actually that I won't be, because I'm a little bit bored of it now. It's just I expect it now, right?
We'll also have a couple of lovely trips like Crawley and Newport to look forward to. That's something to take into account. I don't know. You know, crisis is obviously a strong word, but I mean, if you can't use it after you've gone and been pumped away at Porsche and, you know, lost against Northampton. Northampton clearly aren't like traditionally like enormous rivals of ours, but they are, you know, it's a game with an added spice because of the locality of it, obviously.
Big away following.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing, right? And you know, it's so noticeable, and I don't want to, you know, kind of sit here and just kind of, you know, wave my tickets around and be like, you know, we've been there, done it. We're going up and down the country, which we are, but it's so noticeable. Like some of the opinions that come out and some of the analysis of what's going on come out. It's so clear who's been to games and traveled it and spent the money and done the journeys and who hasn't. Like, it's really obvious. And it's like our away support this season has been phenomenal. Like in terms of numbers, I think we're averaging about 1,000. Obviously, clearly there's a couple of like bigger games in there, you know, Porsche, Northampton, even like Derby, for example, where, you know, you expect a bit of a away following. That will probably even out over the course of the season when we're, you know, trekking to fucking Exeter and Bristol Rovers in January and Carlisle in February. I'm sure that might take a bit of a dent on the old average away attendances. But, you know, the point I'm making is that, like, it's not being rewarded with any level of performance. And I don't want to sit here and like pearl clutch about, oh, well, we've done the money, so we should be winning games. Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, particularly in the context of Saturday and particularly in the context of what happened at Peterborough, like we were nowhere near value for money there. Like, you know, what was it 1,300, 1,400 people, whatever it was, have traveled, you know, spent the ticket money and stuff. And they were just shortchanged by, you know, players who, you know, either weren't willing or weren't able to react to, you know, the biggest humiliation the football club has ever been through in terms of a local derby. And, you know, a manager who just can't seem to change things for love nor money, you know, whether it's through an inability to do it or whether, you know, an unwillingness to do it. I'm not sure what it is. You know, the result is the same. The team stays the same. The setup stays the same. Most of the players stay the same and the results stay the same. And, you know, we're talking about comparing it to last season. I don't think it's even a contest. Like, this is worse. Mm. You know, take into context everything about, you know, the increased budget, and we're talking about the experience of the players and stuff, and we're actually delivering probably worse performances. And yeah, I think, you know, clearly there's a, you know, a lot of people, oh, it's over the top to, you know, the chat will start about Bonner again, but it's not. Like, you know, the stats lay it bare there. What's that like? And, you know, essentially an entire league season from, you know, obviously October till now, and it is relegation form. And it's clearly relegation form. And, you know, obviously we stayed up last season on merit because we were better than four other teams, just. But, like, you know, I don't want to just criticise Bonner when things go wrong and praise other people when things go right. Like, it should be done in equal measure. But, you know, Smith pulled his finger out big time at the end of last season without his goals, you know, like last minute equalisers away at Bolton and stuff, and turned to fucking Marco van Basten at times. Like, we wouldn't be in this division. And I'm not saying that none of that was down to Bonner, because clearly he was able to galvanize the team and motivate them to, you know, pick it up at the end of last season. But don't let that paper over the cracks. So that was seven games. Like, it's not reflective of where we are as a team. Like, we're much, much worse than that is the reality. And it's exactly the same conversations that are starting again. It's like, well, don't worry, we're 4 points off the relegation zone. And, you know, that goes in an instant. Like, that'll be what, you know, early mid-December, that could be gone. And that's exactly what happened last year, and that's what it looks like may happen this year. And you know what, we might be overreacting a bit, but fucking hell, like, you know, look what we've watched. Like, look at the results against the opposition that we've played. Like, I think we're entitled to have a bit of a moan and a bit of a paddy about it, to be honest with you. So yeah, you know, it's maybe not like action stations. I've got no doubts that we're not going to sack the manager. So don't, you know, if anyone's of that mindset, you know, don't worry yourself about it. It's not going to happen. So things have just got to improve. Like, people just got to start doing their jobs better fundamentally. And kind of getting a bit sick of saying it, to be honest, because we've been saying it for weeks now, and feels like we're going round and round and round in circles, and it's different players letting us down on one occasion. It's the same lineups which aren't working. But you know, someone's just got to have a word, I think.
You mentioned the brilliant away support that we have. It feels really bad that most of these, well, a lot of these terrible performances are happening away from home. Our home form is slightly better. And the good news is we have a home game on Tuesday. So let's now turn our attentions to that. And we'll kick it off with our preview with the Stacey West blog from Lincoln.
Right there, news fans, I'm joined by Charlie from the Stacey West podcast. We're looking ahead to the game at the Abbey on Tuesday night, Cambridge against Lincoln. Charlie, Lincoln coming to this one ninth in the table. Well, obviously, has been a change of manager fairly recently on the face of it. From the outside looking in, it looks like, you know, as a whole, the season seems to be going okay. But how would you sort of summarise, you know, the season so far?
Yeah, look, it's you kind of summed it up there really within one sentence. We are sat there in ninth place. We're, you know, only, what, 3 points off the playoffs. And that's with a managerial change and a whole month where we have an interim manager. So for me, I think it's a really positive season so far. There are obviously question marks that have been raised at us. But I think there's also loads of things that we can actually use, not as excuses, but as kind of explanations for certain things. For example, we have been ravaged with injuries quite a lot this season. I believe on Saturday we had something like 8 players out. We had a whole month and a half where we didn't have a single fit striker. We have one of our starting wide players who would typically be starting more or less every game for us. He's currently out as well. One of our defenders is out for the whole season. We had, you know, on Saturday, we had one of our midfielders suspended. It's sort of one of those things where actually when you take a step back, like, some of the results have been poor, some of the performances have been poor. No one's going to deny that. But we start to have a change in play style under a new manager. And when you take a step back and you think, okay, actually, we're in ninth place with all of this going on, our aspirations were at best trying to clinch maybe like that sixth place spot to try and sneak into the playoffs. And we're sat in this position and, you know, hoping and expecting, if you like, a better second half of the season. For me, I'm just really, really happy with whereabouts we are.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, typical early fan, I just kind of judge from the outside looking in, don't really read loads much more into it. But, you know, I'll be honest, speaking for myself, I was quite surprised to see Lincoln, you know, make the change. You know, typically you'd associate with teams who are miles off, you know, what their expectations would be. But it seems like it's more of a proactive thing, you know, almost from the outside looking in. I mean, what did you make of the decision to you know, get rid of Kennedy and bring in Skubala?
Well, look, I've got to be honest, when Kennedy was sacked, I wasn't actually surprised at all. I thought that it was a way that we were going. We're a team that prides ourselves, we're a club that prides ourselves in wanting to be able to, you know, support younger players. We've got a clear ambition within the club now. You know, we've got owners and investors from sort of across the Atlantic, and there's a clear ambition for us to get into the Championship. But we're not going to be doing it by spending stupid amounts of money and trying to buy the league and buying 29, 30-year-old experienced players that could give us one season, and then we're in the, you know, in the dog poop, if you like. What we're going to do is we're always going to try and do it sustainably. That's something we really sort of try to do, start by young, sell slightly older, and sell for a good bit of money, for example. With Mark Kennedy, his play style was quite negative at times. We didn't really have too much of the ball, which then meant that some of our young, exciting, attacking players weren't really able to showcase their talent, which meant that them as an asset, we never really got to kind of see the most of their progression. So, like I said, the results weren't necessarily going too great, but they also weren't the only reason why Mark Kennedy was sat. That was very much kind of known. There was a clear kind of difference between his style and what the club wanted. We wanted, like I said, to really try and progress younger players. He wasn't very good at that necessarily. And then in the final 2 weeks, he ended up sort of calling out 3 different players in 3 separate post-match interviews. It was weird because he never did that as a manager beforehand. But then to kind of throw these players under the bus in post-match interviews, it just seemed like there'd been this total lack of, sort of kind of breakdown of trust between him and the players or him and the club or whatever. So then as soon as it happened, I wasn't surprised at all. I was actually really glad as well, purely for the fact then that I thought we were at a really kind of exciting crossroads for us. And if we went out and made the right appointment, which, you know, hopefully we have done now with Michael Skubala, it's still early days, but it seems really positive, everything that I'm hearing. If we can make the right appointment, it means that we can push into, let's say, the playoffs this season. And I think it was a real kind of perfect opportunity and perfect time for us to do that then. Because if we waited any longer and that trust broke down even further, I feel like we'd have been having to pick up the pieces rather than, like you say, making the proactive choice.
Yeah, for sure. What do you make of the job that Skubala has done so far? Obviously, it is early days, but I guess you've, you know, probably seen a few things that maybe have changed so far.
Yeah, he's clearly wanted to implement a style that is a lot more kind of attacking, a lot more, okay, let's get fans off their seat, you know, and it's a proper cliche, but we can definitely see that he's wanted to do that. We've had three games under Skubala now. Away at Stevenage was his first match. We lost 1-0, but that's away at Steve Evans. His Stevenage for his first game in league, for his first game managing a side in League One. So, yeah, okay, we lost, but actually that one, I don't think really meant too much. It was just a learning process. Then the Tuesday night away, we won at Leyton Orient. Now, obviously, I'm not sure if you're aware of the tragic incident that happened in the first kind of game between us and Leyton Orient that meant the full game got replayed. In the first match that got called off, we were losing 1-0. We didn't really show too much. In the second game, we were, you know, it was still 0-0. We scored a late winner, but we showed that we were constantly trying to put bodies forward, get the ball forward, and it was a real kind of shift in mentality than what it has been like over the past 18 months. And then that was evidenced again yesterday at home to Barnsley, where it was a really end-to-end game. We were 1-0 up for the longest time, and then it went to, then they managed to get two quickfire goals to make it 2-1. But that, I feel like if that was a Mark Kennedy side, then actually the game probably would have ended 2-1. But we didn't allow that to happen. We just went back, constantly pushed them then, got an equaliser. And to be honest, if anybody looked like scoring those sort of final 7 minutes of added time, it looked like it'd be us. So, like I said, there's really this kind of progressive attacking kind of side that we want to be now that we've not necessarily been able to see because we've got the players to do it. So hopefully now we've got a manager that's going to give them the freedom and the expression to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, you know, sounds like an exciting appointment. Then in a sense, it's more expansive style, you know, more focused on how you can hurt teams. I guess leads me nicely on to who are the players who are going to hurt teams? Who are the ones to watch?
Well, so I've already kind of mentioned we have got a little bit of an attacker injury crisis. We do have some attackers. But for me, in terms of the players that are going to be able to hurt you, I mean, we've got two midfielders, Ethan Arahan and Ethan Hamilton. Now, both of them, as far as I'm concerned, probably one of, if not the best midfield partnership in this league. Them two are absolutely outstanding, could both easily be playing higher than League One, especially at the minute. So really, really impressed by both of them. And I think they could really do damage. The only thing is obviously, we've spoken and there's a chance that you guys may be playing like a three-man from midfield, you know. So there is a chance that, you know, we may get overrun, shall we say, in that kind of sense. Even though those two are perfectly capable of playing against the three, I think what will actually kind of give us the opportunity to utilise our wide players more. And there's one wide player I think stands out, and every Lincoln fan will probably agree, and that's our right wing back, Lars Sørensen. Tall Danish, absolutely has the best engine I've ever seen on a player. He will run for the full 90 minutes and he's got some incredible end product. He's scored some goals this season for a right wing back. He's created so many chances. At Charlton at home, he had 11 shots in the game and still didn't score. It was just one of those really unfortunate ones. At one point, one of our own players ended up blocking the shot. It was just one of those things. But I think he's going to be the one player, if I had to pick one player that would do damage to you, I really think Lars Sørensen is going to be massive for us on Tuesday night.
Yeah, for sure. Well, for the Cambridge fans that have been listening to the first part of this show, but you know, obviously before you come on, Charlie, they'll have heard me and the guys absolutely tearing into our such a difficulties defending from wide areas. So that'll be a sign. perhaps not the best thing to be hearing, but. I guess then the big question: How would you see the game going? What's your thoughts on how it'll pan out?
Look, I'm obviously going to be going for an away victory. I think we're going to be able to utilize, you know, really kind of target your weaknesses. So you've mentioned the wide players, sort of the wide areas of the pitch that you really do struggle with, and I think somebody like a Lars Sørensen on the right hand side in particular is really going to be able to punish you if you're not kind of able to deal with that too much. So I think we're going to get two goals. I think it's going to be a 2-0 victory. You know, I think we're going to be able to keep a clean sheet. Maybe I'm being a little bit hopeful there, but I really do. And I think we're going to have two goals, both from open play, both from playing some wide, expansive football. And it would be something that could really get Lincoln fans properly behind this new manager, which, to be fair, it's only been three games, but they clearly already are.
Well, it's good to see someone's bullish. I'm not sure I can kind of back that myself, but yeah, well, look, we'll see how it goes. But Charlie, thanks so much for joining us, and all the best for the rest of the season.
Thanks so much for having me.
Right. Thank you very much to Charlie from the Stacey West outfit. Right. Big one on Tuesday. I remember naively in the preview pod only a few days ago saying to Matt Caspel, I backed us for 6 points over this header, double header. If we don't pick up 3 points on Tuesday night, how big is that for the rest of the season, do you think, Julian? Like, do you think Tuesday is a must win for Mark Bonner and co?
God, it's starting to feel like it a little bit, isn't it? There's sort of, if you look ahead and you look at Tuesday night and then look at our league fixtures after that, Charlton away, Blackpool at home, just beat top of the league, Pompey 4-0, Exeter at home, Oxford away, Stevenage away. If you look at that up until the new year, there's two games there that you, especially the Exeter game, right? Let's make that clear. Like, look at Exeter's form at the moment. But this Lincoln game, like you said, our home form is marginally better. So you have to show that. And this is the sort of team where I just don't want to go into it with that little old Cambridge mentality. Like, let's try and dominate this game. Let's take the game to them. We've talked about the fact that we've got some good players. We're easily good enough to beat them. They've got a new manager. They've won one, lost one, drawn one, I just saw under him so far. So they're maybe still figuring it. Either you can spin it that either they're going to have a new manager bounce or they're still figuring it out. So I don't know. Lincoln may be a bit of an unknown entity at the moment. But for me, as big a game as this is, it really is a big game as far as I'm concerned.
So the good news, Tom, we won't see Digby playing that number eight role that he's been playing. What, obviously not knowing who came out of Saturday injured or whatever, but assuming everyone is fit to play, what sort of change, if any, would you like to see to the lineup and the approach?
It might just be kind of recency bias, but I'd quite like to see that front four that finished the game start the game. I don't know what you do with the middle of the park. May can't play again. No chance. Just shouldn't happen.
Cousins and Thomas. I'd love to see them two in there.
Yeah, Cousins and Thomas, or even Cousins and Lewis Simple. I think Lewis Simple uses the ball really well. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's probably what we're going to need against Lincoln. And you know, obviously Thomas uses the ball really well as well. So it's kind of, you know, tomato tomato in some ways. You know, have one, have the other. It doesn't really matter too much. And you know, obviously Thomas is the one with the pedigree, I guess. So you know, naturally you'd assume he'd get the nod, but. I'm just going to sort of cotton on to what Julian was saying really a little bit. Like, I don't think it's right that you call a game in November must win, because obviously it's not. Like, it's not, you know, going to define your season, you know, realistically win, lose or draw. But like, there's a difference when you call it a must win for that reason and call it a must win for all the other reasons of like optics and just like getting a bit of an atmosphere going around the football club again, because it feels like it's just a really low ebb. And, you know, beyond the points that it gives and beyond what it will do for our league position and stuff, I don't really think that matters at this stage of the season too much. You know, so you want to keep points ticking over and stuff like that. But it's more just for like a bit of pride. Like, we've been beaten by two of our local rivals in our last two games, one of them very embarrassingly, one of them very disappointingly. And like, just like, surely there comes a point when the players like, we got to do something a little bit better here. Like, we're not playing up to the right standard. I mean, this is going well away from the point of what I do with the midfield, Jordan, I'll be honest with you. But, you know what? We spoke a couple of weeks ago about the messaging that comes out of football club, particularly in pre-match press conferences. And the more I think about it, the more I just think it's just gearing us up to lose these games. Because, you know, there'll be no doubt that when the pre-match press conference, you know, comes out, it'll be Lincoln, a brilliant team, well-funded, well-resourced. Brilliant manager, all the rest of it. And obviously it's the same about, you know, it's been coming out about the Posh game. Like, if it's been drilled into these players week on week on week, and I'm not saying this is the messaging internally, but the messaging externally, and you have to assume that even at least subconsciously the players will take it on board because they'll see it and they'll hear it. Like, if you're consistently being told that you're worse than the opposition you're playing against, it must at some point become a little bit demoralising. It must be like going into games thinking, we'll probably lose, won't we? And that'll probably be okay because they've got more money than us, sort of thing. So yeah, look, we'll have to see. It's a huge game, I think, for so many reasons. Strangely, least of all, the actual tangible reason of getting 3 points on the board in some ways. Just restore a bit of pride. I think that's it. But in terms of personnel, I'll go back to the question I was asked in some roundabout way. We were asked earlier if Okadina should come back in. I think absolutely. Yeah. Like if not, just release him. If you're never going to play him, if you're not going to bring him back in now, obviously centre-backs will remain the same, and obviously Danny Andrew will stay at left-back, and I think the main question marks, I'm almost making the assumption the front four will stay the same as it finished the game, because it was, you know, doing good things, I think, ish. The main question there is who plays alongside Cousins, assuming Cousins has come through Saturday. Okay. I think it's probably quite likely to be Thomas. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know what, I think like Digby not being there, you know, as much as, you know, he deserves not to be there for the utter stupidity of what he did on Saturday. But I think it'll force us to play in a slightly different way. Like it won't be so like attritional, you know, it might force us to use the ball a little bit better. It might force us to, you know, play a little bit more intelligently, maybe with players who've actually got the quality at their feet to be able to deliver good football, good level football. So yeah, then it might be a bit of a blessing in disguise, really, him getting sent off, as much obviously it was a real frustration at the time. I mean, I said at the start of the year, like, I think there will, like, ideally at some point you just phase Digby out, because I don't think he's as good as the competition that he's got for his place. Without trying to just lay into him too much, but yeah, obviously we're going to be forced into one or two changes, and I like to think that you know, those that ended the game and made a bit of a go of it with 10 men would be given the opportunity to do so again, but we'll see.
Right, let's wrap it up with some predictions. I'll kick us off. I have just looked at the league table and spotted that Lincoln are ninth. For some reason, I thought they were much lower than that, which is going to make my prediction of a back-to-back wins on Tuesday and then again on Saturday in the Cup seem very optimistic. But I'm going with it. I'm going with a win on Tuesday night. Well, how about you, boys?
I actually agree with you, which is sort of bizarre considering just the hour that we've just
definitely not happening then.
Definitely not happening. But I think for the reason Tom just gave, I think we might actually see him have to play in a different sort of way that is, you know, probably counterintuitive for Bonner. But I think it'll be exactly that. The front four that finished the game on Saturday, maybe Brophy instead of Kaikar on the right, potentially. And then Thomas playing a bit deeper. And I think we might actually just show the creativity that we have. And I think I don't know why, but I'll go 2-0.
Nice. Go on, Tom.
Oh, mate, I feel so weathered. Oh, I feel like I've been through the mill over the last 2 weeks. Oh, dear. It's difficult to be positive for me, I think. I like to think we can take something from the game, but I can't see us winning it. Just don't. Just, yeah.
Just score then.
Therefore, a draw, I guess.
Therefore, yeah. A draw.
I'll tell you what, I'll go for a 1-1 draw. Kachunga will score, and we'll still be none the wiser as who the fuck sponsors him. So we'll see. It's four words. Put it on the fucking picture.
And that seems like a good place to end it. Julian, it's been a pleasure, mate.
Yeah, it has. Thank you very much for guiding us through this tricky morning, Jord.
It's 2 p.m, mate. Yeah. It's been a big night. Tom, a pleasure.
Yeah, as always.